This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Have you heard about the one about the woman who gave birth to rabbits? Or the giants rumored to live in Patagonia? What about the Stone Age tribe hidden in the remotest parts of the Philippines? All caused a sensation when first publicized, all, alas, untrue. Alongside the legitimate history of humanity is a shadow tale, a strange narrative of things people believed and of the people who sold them those stories. Maybe you've been the source of a hoax or the victim, or maybe you're just an interested student. Give us a call anyway. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from the studios of member station KPBS in San Diego is Alex Berza. He's the author of The Museum of Hoaxes, A History of Outrageous Pranks and Deceptions. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Neil. It's good to be with you.
In our last segment, as I'm sure you know, we discussed the War of the Worlds, a great hoax. Panicked listeners up and down the East Coast caused a mass hysteria. True or not?
Well, hoax purists would say that it's actually not a hoax because Orson Welles probably didn't intend to get as big a reaction as he eventually got. You know, the definition of a hoax is that a hoax has to be purposefully deceptive.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks as if Orson Welles didn't really intend for it to be as deceptive as it turned out to be. As you mentioned, they told everybody at the top of the broadcast that this is a play. And then if you listened on about halfway through the play, they reminded people again. And the entire broadcast was very theatrical. If you listen to it now, it's hard to believe that anybody could have been panicked by this because, for one thing, the time in the broadcast was incredibly compressed. So
those spaceships were pretty quick, yeah.
Oh, they incredibly quick, yeah. You know, one minute they're looking at flares from Mars, the next minute they've traveled 10 miles to Grover's Mill, the next minute there's Martians marching across New Jersey. So it's hard to believe, you know, with all of that he really intended to get as big a reaction as he got. Now, of course, he was immensely pleased when he got that reaction. But in terms of that, you know, as I said, hoax purists, and that, you know, that's a very small group of people, probably wouldn't describe it as a hoax technically.
Those of us in the radio business know the most incredible part was that they had a reporter on the scene at all of these events.
Exactly, right, yeah.
And all their microphones worked. Let's get a phone call in on this question. Dan joins us on the line from Sandwich, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Let's go back to the War of the Worlds hoax just a little bit.
Go ahead.
The War of the Worlds did not occur in a vacuum. Advertising was in its adolescence, and the listening public had not yet grown callous to outlandish claims. A nasty hurricane had come up the East Coast and battered New Jersey and New York. There was no forecast. People just got hit. It made the news. It was a big deal. People were upset. Also, a few weeks previously, Hitler made a speech that was broadcast untranslated, and the invective really upset people. Everybody knew this guy was really angry. The Nazis made good use of propaganda. People were primed to accept what they had heard on the radio, and with the Grover's Mill of Maryland event, people just went off the edge. They were on edge, and they just went over the edge. Now, that was my theory in a college paper, and it worked for a college paper. Maybe it works for you, too.
So what kind of a grade did you get, Dan?
Oh, I got an ace on that one.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Let me ask you about that, Alex. I mean, are we less credulous today than the people of 1938? Human nature doesn't change all that much.
Oh God, no. Definitely not less credulous today. In fact, I often say that we probably live in the golden age of the hoax nowadays because of the internet, which has just created this mass explosion in hoaxing. One point that Dan kind of touched on is the climate, the social climate of that time. And what that touches on is this idea that people are very quick to believe ideas that they're already predisposed to believe in or you know, views that they already believe to be true. So if you look at the climate that time, there were a social climate, there were a lot of bad things happening. He mentioned the hurricane. You know, it was the economy was in a terrible state, so people were out of jobs. There was a potential of war with Germany. And so, you know, with all that bad news, people had a pretty pessimistic view about the world. So then they hear on the radio oh, you know, Martians are attacking New Jersey. So for a lot of people, it was like, oh, yeah, just, you know, one more bad thing. That seems to make sense to us. So in that sense, they were, you know, willing to believe that something bizarre and awful like this could actually happen. And today, you know, that's just as true. People, if they have some preconceived view about the world, you know, they're just as ready to accept evidence that comes along that confirms that view.
Let's get another caller in. Jay joins us on the line from Rocky Mount, North Carolina.
Yeah, I remember I was about 12 years old when this happened. Back in 1967, and you may remember this too, they had a news item that said that Paul McCartney had been killed, and they referenced some Beatles songs and to the fact to kind of clue people in.
Oh, yes, if you played things backwards.
Right, or in the end of I Am the Walrus, you know, it said something about your grandfather has left you, and then it said something about, oh, my, are you dead or something. But I forgot how long that hoax went on, but I remember hearing it. It seemed like they ran the article on the news that they had even said that Paul McCartney had been killed. I was wondering if either one of y'all remembered that.
I still have the button that says Paul Lives, WMCA Swings. But
wow, yeah, that was something. It was a hoax. Everybody around the school was kind of running around saying, "Oh my gosh, Paul McCartney's dead!" And I was like, "What?" So you know, I had heard it, you know, but it sure went over.
Alex Brizzi, is that something you've looked into?
Oh yeah, the very famous hoax and. What happened here was that the rumor was that Paul McCartney had died in a car crash in November of 1966, and that the Beatles didn't want to admit that he had died, so they brought in a double, a McCartney lookalike, to take his place. And this guy was named William Campbell. And this all only came out about 2 years later in 1968. One of the events that kind of triggered this was that a DJ played Revolution 9 from the White Album backwards, and when he played this backwards, people swore that they could hear the phrase, quote, "Turn me on, dead man," in Revolution 9 played backwards. And everybody thought, oh, you know, this must mean that, you know, Paul is dead. And they started to find all other kinds of clues. For instance, if you look at the cover of Abbey Road, on one of the cars behind that cover has the four Beatles walking across a zebra crossing in London. If you look at one of the cars parked on the street, the license plate is 28 if. And everybody said, ah, that must mean that Paul would have been 28
if
he
had
lived.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And one of them had bare feet, didn't he?
Yes, and people said that the four Beatles walking across the road were actually symbolic of a funeral procession, Paul's, you know, funeral march. All kinds of crazy clues started to come up.
Well, Jay, I have to tell you that two of the Beatles, regrettably, are dead, but
yeah,
Paul is not among them.
Well,
he's still with us.
I know. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much for the
call.
Have a good
day.
All right. Let's go now to Eden, and Eden's in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, wonderful show. I think one of the greatest hoaxes that really helped us out was in World War II. Everybody just believed what was on the radio, and Hitler, also believing that the Allies would invade in Calais, ignored a huge invasion at Normandy with a deception that General Patton was leading an army to cross at Calais, which allowed us to put a bridgehead in the other side of Europe and begin the process to win the war. That was very successful for our country and for the Allies.
Indeed, General Patton made a lot of broadcasts, and there was a lot of radio traffic from southern England at the time that sort of mimicked the presence of an army that would come across, led by him at the Pas de Calais. And it was a great line from Winston Churchill. The whole project was known as Bodyguard, and he said, the truth was too precious not to be guarded with a bodyguard of lies. It was one of his great lines. Alex, does that get to the difference? Of course, it's a ruse de guerre or a ruse of war. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between disinformation and a hoax, isn't there?
A hoax is an outrageous lie. So in popular usage, people use the term hoax to apply that to all manner of things. Again, some people would say that a hoax has to have a more mischievous, outrageous, or somehow humorous aspect. So often when people think of hoaxes, they don't tend to think of these military deceptions such as camouflage and all those other techniques. So that would be true.
Email question from William Babcock in North Little Rock, Arkansas. What's the difference, he asked, between a hoax and an urban myth, if there is one?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. A hoax has to be, as I said before, purposefully deceptive. So eventually that you're going to find some hoaxer or group of hoaxers who engineered this deception. Urban legends, on the other hand, are more like a species of contemporary folklore. There are these stories that they're related to hoaxes in that both are a species of misinformation, but it doesn't seem that urban legends have any author, or at least no author that anybody can find. They kind of circulate around through the society. Often they have existed for decades, almost 100 years, and they get adapted to different circumstances, different regions of the country. So that's the basic difference between the two. But people often get them confused.
In your book, you dwell on the role that journalism, especially in its early days, played in tweaking the public. We have a slightly later example we'd like to present for your consideration.
Nixon for president in 1992, an act of complete political lunacy or another extraordinary development in an already history-making campaign for the White House. Reaction this hour on Talk of the Nation. Our number here is 800-989-TALK, 800-989-8255.
Well, the host has changed the phone number, hasn't? That, of course, Talk of the Nation's April Fool's Day show back in 1992. Who knew we were participating in such a grand tradition? Journalism has been involved in a lot of hoaxes, right, Alex?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's always been a connection between journalism and hoaxes. And the reason that is because journalism thrives on sensationalism. You at some point, as soon as the newspaper industry became a commercial industry in which it had to sell papers, they needed sensational stories to get those papers into people's hands, to persuade people to offer up money for them. So it didn't take long for the newspaper industry to discover that hoaxes, just making up outrageous lies, is a great way to sell papers because people, one of the early examples of this, and some say a hoax that actually launched the modern mass media, was the Great Moon Hoax of 1835, in which the New York Sun newspaper, which coincidentally still exists today, so it was obviously successful at what it did, the New York Sun announced that life had been discovered on the moon by the great British astronomer Sir John Herschel. And this just, people went wild over this. They were giving these fantastic details about this moon life. There were biped beavers and these winged man bats that were flying around the lunar terrain. And they just sold the newspapers hand over fist. You know, people couldn't get enough of this until finally, it took a while for the boats to get back and forth from America to Europe in those days. Finally, you know, they waited for a confirmation of this news from Europe. It never came, obviously. So people at that point began to figure out, well, maybe this thing about life on the moon, it wasn't quite true. But in the meantime, the New York Sun had become the paper with the largest circulation in the world as a consequence of that hoax.
Well, you may be perpetrating a hoax of your own, but the New York Sun did go out of business for a few decades there, and the
it
version
did.
You
it
see
did. It's you come, see
back
come
is
back.
A new version.
Yes.
I don't think it has anything
right.
to do with the previous ownership of
well,
the
it
New
actually,
York Sun.
Well, it actually now retains the original masthead, I believe, from the 19th century version. So it does have a it is trying to make a connection with the old paper.
Does it still have the same motto, "It shines for all"?
I believe it does, yeah.
Alex Bursa is the author of The Museum of Hoaxes, Wonderful Stories Contrived for the Public from the Middle Ages to the New Millennium. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Richard, who joins us on the line from Reno, Nevada.
Yes, sir. I was wondering what Alex's thoughts were on the story in Sports Illustrated, late 70s, early 80s, the curious case of Sid Finch, a pitcher. He was like 6'8", 6'9", pitched with one shoe, could throw like 130 miles an hour, was in the Mets, supposedly in the Mets farm system, and I believe it actually came out on April 1st. And, you know, of course, it created an uproar. Being a Mets fan, I thought, oh, my God, we got this guy who's going to be throwing 130 miles an hour. World championships up and down the board, and then, you know, we find out that this guy doesn't exist. Does that classify as a really good hoax, or how does he think it fits in there?
Certainly got a rise out of people, didn't it, Alex?
Oh, definitely. And this is one of the most probably beloved April Fool's Day hoaxes of all time. It was written by the great writer George Plimpton, who just recently died. Like the caller was saying, you know, describes this guy, Sid Finch, who had learned how to play baseball at a Tibetan monastery that was under the guidance of the great poet Saint Lama Milarepa. And when he pitched, he would kind of curl himself up into this pretzel shape and throw out the ball at 168 miles per hour. So obviously the Mets were Just couldn't believe their luck that they had gotten this guy. And Mets fans everywhere were looking at this and thought, oh, my God, you know, what did we do to be so lucky? And Sports Illustrated kept this joke going for quite a while. And actually, George Plimpton even wrote a novel about Sid Finch later, which is a great book.
Thanks for the call, Richard.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks. And let's hear now from Jeff. And Jeff is in Columbus, Ohio.
Hi. All of this makes me remember the Cardiff Giant, which was a famous hoax of the mid-19th century. Back long ago, when I was in eighth grade, we had a reading program called SRS, which was a reading comprehension program.
Mm-hmm.
Read little stories and then answer questions. And one of them was about the Cardiff Giant, about a giant stone human figure in a fetal position, would have been about 10 feet tall, stretched out, found in a farmer's field in New York State in the 1840s or 1850s. It created quite a stir, and it was perceived that there had been this race of giants that peopled what would be the United States, and one of them had died and become petrified. And nobody ever figured out who did it or when or what the purpose was, but then I encountered the Cardiff Giant not many years later when I visited the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown, New York, and I think the thing is still there. It was under a wooden shed. It had been preserved and taken to this museum and put on display and the story told.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alex, what can you tell us about the Cardiff Giant?
People definitely know who perpetrated that hoax, because the hoaxer behind the Cardiff Giant actually confessed only 3 months or so after the Cardiff Giant was dug out of the ground. It was a man named George Hull, who was actually a confirmed atheist. And one day he was talking to a minister and saying, you know, do you really believe all this stuff that's in the Bible about giants once having lived on the earth, etc.? And the minister was saying, oh, yes, yes, you know, I take everything in the Bible literally. And then George Hull said, well, you know, if somebody came up with some evidence to prove all this stuff in the Bible really literally happened, would you pay money to see that? And the minister said, oh, I probably would. And that was the inspiration for George Hull to come up with this massive 10-foot-tall carved stone giant that he convinced his cousin, a farmer named Stubb Newell, to bury in his farm. And then they waited a year, and Stubb Newell pretended that he was having a well dug on his farm, and the well diggers, you know, surprise, surprise, came across this giant stone figure. And soon they had people coming from all over paying 25 cents each, which, you know, back in 1869 when it occurred was a lot of money, to see this stone giant. And it was like a circus. They had a tent over this thing. But it's remembered as kind of one of the greatest hoaxes in American history.
We're going to continue our conversation about hoaxes when we come back from a short break. Also, you're going to need this tomorrow night, the Zombie Survival Guide, Complete Protection from the Living Dead. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And we're going to continue now with our discussion on hoaxes. Our guest is Alex Boerza, and he's the author of The Museum of Hoaxes, Wonderful Stories Contrived for the Public from the Middle Ages to the New Millennium. And we have an email, Stephen, from Stephen in New York. Any discussion of modern hoaxes, he writes, would be incomplete without a mention of Joey Skaggs. His hoaxes from 1966 to the present, including the hippie bus tour of Queens, celebrity sperm bank auctions, and the cat house for dogs, fooled vast numbers of people, especially the overzealous media, racing for salacious and sensational stories. What have you heard about Joey Skaggs?
Stephen is right that, you know, Joey Skaggs is definitely one of the most prominent hoaxers in modern times. And his point that he seems to want to prove, and he proves it very effectively time after time, is that you can get the media to believe any wild story as long as it's sensational enough, you know, because as we were talking about before, the media loves sensationalism because sensational stories sell papers, they get people to watch the TV. So some of the hoaxes he mentioned, like the cat house for dogs, which was he ran a newspaper ad describing this service for dogs where concerned pet owners who didn't feel that their pets were, you know, being amorously entertained enough, could take their pets to this doggy bordello, and where they could spend their dogs could spend the night in this and you know, have a very nice night and then leave satisfied the next morning. And sure enough, you know, the media fell for this. It got lots of coverage, and you know, Skaggs just he's able to do these things time after time, and for some reason the you know, he always gets away with it. He's a little bit more well known now, so he has to disguise himself a bit, but he's still going at it, you know, to this day.
We should point out, earlier we were talking about how often the media has tried to pull hoaxes. More often victims, I suspect.
I think it's pretty equal. You know, as I was saying, the media likes hoaxes because it sells a copy for them.
Okay. Alex Berza, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
Alex Berza is the author of The Museum of Hoaxes, A History of Outrageous Pranks and Deceptions, and curator of www.museumofhoaxes.com. He joined us from the studios of member station KPBS in San Diego. One final email. Hi, I've been sitting here listening to your program while having a beer with my buddies Elvis and Bigfoot, writes Klaatu, and we've been wondering, how can so many people be so stupid?